It is 7:01. We're here on a special meeting of the Warwick City Council, and the clerk is up here. Okay. If you could call a roll in. Here.
Mr. Corley?
Here.
Mr. Howe?
Here.
Mr. Lattiser?
Yes.
Mr. McAllister?
Here.
Mr. McCorley?
Yeah.
Mr. Rick?
Here.
If Councilman Lattiser could lead us in the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I also wanted to, I don't think we have a national anthem tonight, thank you, Councilwoman, because our council chambers have been are being renovated, and if everybody could take their seats, I'd like to thank everybody for coming tonight, and also thank Mayor Solomon and my colleagues for their hard work on many of the issues that we faced so far in this young season, council season. Mayor Solomon had asked us to call a special meeting for, this is the first time I can recall, a state of the city address, which I think is helpful because, as one of my wise colleagues said many years ago, if you don't know where you're going, you're gonna end up someplace else. And I think it's always good to get a big picture, and I appreciate the mayor doing this for us. And at this time, I'd like to introduce the mayor of the city of Warwick, Joseph Solomon.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. Thank you, Council President, and thank all of you here this evening. Before we commence with the what I believe to be the first State of the City address, so you're all part of history here this evening, I'd first like to recognize some former elected officials and current elected officials that are present here that are also concerned about the state of the city and the city of Warwick, and I appreciate their love and consideration and their devotion to our taxpayers. We have with us this evening former Councilman Carlo Pizzatoro, former Councilman Joe Gallucci, former Councilman Tom Chadronet, school committee member Kyle Adams, school committee member Nathan Cornell, of course, Representative Joe Solomon Jr., former Mayor Joe Walsh from the city of Warwick, and Senate Majority Leader Mike McCaffrey, I believe I saw just walk in. If there's anyone I missed, that's probably because I wasn't able to catch you as you were walking in, but I welcome all of you here this evening. And of course, the Honorable City Council, who is hosting this special meeting this evening so that we can deliver this message to our community. The department directors that serve us on a daily basis, the employees of the city of Warwick, who are dedicated to the service of both businesses and citizens of our community, and business owners, citizens, guests, and family members. Council President Michael Solomon from the City of Providence, former Council President, welcome. Again, I'm pleased to welcome all of you here tonight for our first State of the City address in recent history. I'd like to recognize the ongoing efforts of the City Council, who are working very hard with this administration to address many of the issues that we face in the city. We've accomplished a great deal so far. I applaud the work and dedication of our school committee and all our department directors for their commitment to the city. Most importantly, I'd like to thank our residents and business community who remain vested in ensuring that Warwick remains a terrific place to live and work. I welcome this opportunity to update you on the state of the city, the good, the bad, and all points in between. When I became mayor, I promised our residents that transparency would be one of my main priorities. With tonight's address, I continue to keep that vow. By pulling the proverbial curtains back on City Hall's windows that people can see inside, let us all be assured that we are indeed working diligently on behalf of the citizens of our city. We're fortunate to live in a city where residents and businesses are vested in its success, where people come together in times of crisis and celebration alike. Our 39 miles of coastline, premier open spaces, and recreational resources are second to none. Wallet Hub, a Washington, D.C.-based organization, recently named Warwick as the fifth safest city in the nation. SmartAsset.com earlier this month named Warwick as the most affordable community in the state of Rhode Island in which to live. And we've been named one of the best places to live in the U.S. on more than one occasion. We're a place with a rich tapestry of community, a tightly woven fabric comprised of dedicated nonprofits, businesses, civic groups, individuals who give their time and talent for the betterment of our city. We have dedicated municipal employees who work very hard every day to ensure that our citizens are getting the quality of services and programs that they rightly deserve. I've been blessed to call Warwick home for over 40 years now. My wife Cindy, my son Joseph, and I could think of a few better places in Rhode Island where we would rather be. Ours is a unique city with all the trappings of a large community, yet with a small town feel created by people who care about one another and who are vested in our collective success. There truly is a lot to celebrate about the city of Warwick. Unfortunately, those of us inside City Hall know that the full state of our city has not been accurately presented to the public for many years. Tonight, we'll take a look at some of our challenges. Our aging infrastructure, which is crumbling. The so-called maintenance budget of the prior administration presented for this fiscal year contains a structural deficit of nearly $7.4 million, setting the city up for a potential structural deficit of roughly $12 million in fiscal year 2020. Our surplus fund was also grossly overstated. Unauthorized contracts in two municipal departments have come to light. Our facilities have been neglected, and school funding remains unresolved. In short, in the many years leading up to my being sworn into the office as mayor, our community had been led to believe that we are sailing along on a calm, tranquil water. Instead, the reality is that we're heading straight into a perfect storm without proper warning, preparedness, or safeguards in place. And since I took office, I'm finding that the issues that presented themselves within the first few weeks of my administration are only the beginning of the storm that we must weather. Nevertheless, my administration, along with my colleagues on the City Council, have taken this challenge, and with courage, grit, and perseverance, this community will prevail. We've been making great strides to steady the ship and chart a new course to safety by working tirelessly to address the many pressing and critical issues facing our great city. When I took office, the challenges began immediately. Just 3 days after I took office and less than 2 weeks before the beginning of the annual budget hearing, the former finance director who helped prepare that budget abruptly retired. His departure made it more difficult to get a clear grasp of the state of the city's finances prior to the City Council's adoption of the fiscal year 19 budget. Compounding all of this was the fact that the finance and treasury department have traditionally been staffed without a succession plan or cross training in place, resulting in our audits never being submitted by state mandated deadlines. This left the Warwick City Council and my administration with tenuous figures upon which to base important financial decisions impacting our taxpayers. With all this in mind, one of my first acts was to engage the services of the Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council, an independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy research and education organization. RIPOC stepped into place right away to review the finance department, its people, processes to identify and correct the weaknesses that lie within those. They proposed a more efficient reorganization to build succession and efficiencies to assure smooth transitions between administrations and to assure that our audits would be completed on time. This safeguard will give us and future administrations accurate financial information as annual budgets are being prepared. With their input, we have already restructured our finance and treasury departments. RIPAC is now working with other city departments. I am waiting additional recommendations that will further our ability to right our financial ship and stay the course to a brighter future for our city. Getting back to the budget, with our new finance team in place, we have been assessing the state of the city's fiscal health line item by item, each line by each line. This begins with scrutinizing the state of the current budget. At this moment, the city of Warwick is ailing with a poor prognosis for the immediate future. The so-called maintenance budget for fiscal year 19 that was presented by the prior administration had a number of significant gaps with a grossly overstated fund surplus. There were a number of factors that were overlooked or not addressed in this maintenance budget. It included the purchase of city street lights with no funds for the planned conversion to LED technology or authorization to do so. The actual reduction in these costs within the fiscal year 2019 budget totals $500,000, none of which is going to be realized this year because there was nothing in place. When the budget was prepared, a new collective bargaining agreement with the fire union had not yet been reached. That still remains unsettled. The proposed budget presented did not contain any funding for the estimated $950,000 associated with fees and contract settlement. The use of the fund balance. The maintenance budget had countless cost increases in it related to contractual obligations and fringe benefits. A tax increase should have been proposed to offset these increased expenses. In addition to a number of items such as streetlights and schools, they were not properly funded. The solution instead was to take $3.8 million from our reserve account. This meant the budget on paper proposed a 0% tax increase that was not mathematically possible, given the omissions that existed in that maintenance budget. All this has created a sizable structural deficit for fiscal year 2020. The real fact is that when I took office, we had a structural deficit for fiscal year 19 of nearly $7.4 million. By our estimation, the fiscal year 20 budget will have a minimum, at minimum, a structural deficit of nearly $12 million. The structural deficit created by the prior administration is projected to increase debt service related to new debt issuance, schools and city buildings, contractual obligations with our collective bargaining units, and projected increased operational cost. Further, the city must address the carry forward of the school department's estimated deficit of more than $4.9 million. Projected increase in school funding for fiscal year 20 and the revenue from LED technology that never materialized. If all these matters are not resolved, the city, as I stated, faces a total potential structural deficit of $18.6 million in fiscal year 20. In addition, prior to my taking office, by July it had been publicly stated that the city reserves were between $22 and $25 million, making everyone feel as though we had an adequate cushion. That was in our local media and state media. The facts are that fiscal year 18 budget included approximately $4.2 million from our general fund to balance that budget. Coupled with the drawdown in the maintenance budget, the city's so-called rainy day fund actually stands between $13 and $14 million. The fact that the fund balance has been so rapidly depleted is of tremendous concern and demonstrates the built-in structural deficit that was created by the prior administration and has compounded over the course of several years. It also raises a red flag. This red flag will be waived in front of the rating agencies because of the rate the funds are currently being used. The fund balance will go in a few years. Rating agencies will be watching closely to ensure that we, as this administration goes forward and this council goes forward, that we will reverse this trend. This is important. The reason it's important because taxpayer money is used to pay the city's loans. Increased liability means lower bond ratings. Lower bond ratings means higher interest cost. Increased interest rates will hamper our ability to borrow sufficient funds to address our crumbling infrastructure, which includes our roads and other capital improvements. Rate hikes will strap Warwick with hefty interest before we can begin to pay down the principal. So we're going to be paying interest well in advance of even touching those principal amounts. Then there's the matter of our responsibilities related to OPEB, or retiree benefits. Within our fiscal year 17 audited financial statements, our liability was approximately $141 million. These calculations, however, were governed by a different set of guidelines. Federal changes to these regulations mean we now need to show under current regulations our full financial obligation going forward. This means that we will show an obligation of roughly $352 million on our balance sheet. This also affects what we should be paying on an annual basis to cover both current and unfunded liability. The city is currently only funding OPEB on a pay-as-you-go basis and is not presently addressing the large unfunded OPEB liability of $352 million that will now be present on the city's balance sheet. This too needs to be addressed if we are to assure the city's future fiscal health. An impossible task, possibly, but we have to work hard and attempt to address this. The city is currently only funding OPEB on a pay-as-you-go basis. From the fiscal year 14 budget to the fiscal year 19 proposed maintenance budget, cost of personnel services on the city side of the budget increased by 87%. Though all of this may seem daunting, I assure you that my administration, with the hard work and vigilance, will steer our financial ship away from these looming hazards. Warwick's future depends on it. My foremost goal is to give our city a solid financial foundation upon which to build in the years to come. With the tools I possess from my accounting background, legal and public service backgrounds, and with the assistance of all my colleagues on the City Council, my department directors, our employees, our school committee, we can get the job done. For example, in the past, we have insisted on fiscal transparency and responsibility relative to competitive bidding process. In the area of healthcare, that saved us more than $20 million in healthcare costs alone. We did that when we were sitting on the City Council. We took on a big task, a major task, and we accomplished that. As councilman, I insisted that real estate appraisal be completed for the former Rhodes Elementary School. This led to the sale of property for $325,000, full market value, and $208,000 more than had originally been offered. And as I've been carefully assessing the city's fiscal health, I've also realized cost savings by not filling a number of positions. We'll be continuing our due diligence in this regard, carefully examining every proposed expenditure, as well as the potential restructuring of departments and personnel for cost savings. Further, up until now, budgets were simply reallocating what was spent in the prior years. Instead, I've already begun taking a very close look at all departmental functions, and I am digging into the numbers supporting the concepts of zero-based budgeting, where each line item starts at zero, and any allocation associated with it must be vigorously defended. And I can assure you that only real revenue with quantifiable figures will be included in my proposed budget. We will not operate by assigning imaginary revenue to any budgetary line item. When we talk of schools, this brings us to another area of deep concern, both from a financial aspect as well as one that affects our entire community. As we know, school funding has been an issue for many years. Even with the consolidation and staff reductions, it's an annual struggle to meet the school department's budget request. And just like many years before, our financial situation is compounded by school funding. The difference between the school committee's request and the budget proposal for schools this current fiscal year was approximately $8 million. Even though the prior administration was aware of the contract that was signed and the funding commitments and the impending reduction in state aid, they did not propose an increase in funding for the school department. This resulted in an overall reduction to the school budget when compared to last year, since state aid for education was also reduced in 2019. This city council ultimately allocated an additional $1.5 million for schools this year. Following that, I proposed to give another $1.7 million, which would have given the schools $3.25 million increase, or 40% of their original requested funding. This would have restored vital programs and services such as mentoring and janitorial staff positions. Unfortunately, these issues remain unresolved, and we now face a school budgetary shortfall in the range of $4 to $5 million. Most, if not all of that, was due to the lack of funding of the budget prepared by the prior administration and its hastily retired finance director. It's essential to resolve this budgetary crisis in order to mitigate lasting effects on the upcoming and all future school budgets. Establishing a baseline through an audit is the first corrective step that has been taken to ensure sound fiscal responsibility for our taxpayers regarding this matter. I realized that in order to find a solution to these very critical issues, I needed to establish an open, productive line of communication with the school department to repair a long, fractured relationship. Myself, my colleagues on the city council, we began meeting with the school committee and members of the administration in an effort to restore funding and reinstate important programs, such as the mentoring program. Despite our discussions and meetings in December, the outgoing school committee voted to take costly legal action against the city under, as we all know, the Carullo Act. Fortunately, the new school committee has agreed to renew discussions and establish a working relationship. They've suspended the costly legal action in favor of mediation. I look forward to continuing discussions with all parties to resolve this impasse. Our children deserve it, and the future of our school system depends on it. In the meantime, I've begun productive discussions with representatives of our school PTOs and PTAs. They've already given me a tremendous insight into the needs and concerns, not just of the individual schools, but the school system generally. Tonight, I renew the promise I've made to the people of Warwick that my administration will continue to work in good faith with the school committee, the city council, parents, and our community in general to resolve these issues and pave the road to a productive path forward. It is of the utmost importance that our schools be the best in the state of Rhode Island, and that we possess the best resources necessary to help our students succeed, balancing this with the resources our full municipal budget and other needs throughout the city have to endure. Relative to contracts, there's a matter of contracts that I've been contending with. Improvements to the fire pension plan, which have saved the taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars, were left to languish. The union has filed a grievance regarding this because the approved collective bargaining agreement failed to include language to solidify this benefit reduction. If the grievance is legally upheld, it will cost the taxpayers dearly. Again, the reason the grievance was filed was because the prior administration failed to include language to solidify this benefit reduction. Shortly after I took office, two more issues related to fire collective bargaining agreements came to light. The first side agreement regarding sick time payouts entered into by the former union president and fire chief took effect in 2013 without council approval or ratification. A second issue was then brought to light regarding a discrepancy on how unused vacation time was calculated for payout. The calculation that the fire department has been using was more generous than what was ratified by the city council. Once these issues were reported to me, I immediately halted these practices. As this process moves forward, we'll remain cooperative and working to determine just how much of the financial impact these two issues have had on our taxpayers in the years they were allowed to continue unchecked. If need be, I will support corrective measures that result in outcomes that are right and just for all our taxpayers. Some of these actions may have been attributed to incomplete or sloppy execution of contracts. To correct this, I immediately implemented a new policy that will preserve the authenticity of the collective bargaining agreements as approved and ratified by the City Council and our unions. This will prevent the possibility of any unauthorized altering or authenticating documents and assure that the final signed agreements have been prepared and amended as approved by the City Council and the collective bargaining units themselves. Although the city and the union remain in arbitration over these matters, I want to make it clear that these disagreements and disagreements with any of our unions do not reflect the fine work that the individual men and women of our city do for our residents and businesses. The services they provide are by far the best statewide. When there's a crisis at 3 a.m., it's the Warwick Police Department and fire you want at your door. When there's a snowstorm or other emergency, there are none better than our DPW director crews and the DPW director and his crews to have the roads assured to be safe to travel upon. And make no mistake, the dedication and commitment we see in these three departments are reflected in offices throughout our city, all our offices. While the media has widely reported on the fire contract issues, there are others that did not receive City Council approval. Nor was the council aware of their existence. Shortly after I appointed our new MIS director, he discovered five existing unauthorized vendor contracts that began in September of 2017 and spanned 15 months. Altogether, those contracts represented roughly $766,500 in unauthorized expenditures. Since uncovering this, the finance director and myself have implemented a new process that requires documented bid drawdown tracking. This will improve fiscal transparency and prevent unauthorized payments from going unnoticed. Even as I continue to remedy these issues, I'm also making good on my promise to make Warwick a convenient place to do business by addressing issues that have been brought to my attention by both developers and the business community. The biggest concern I've heard since taking office regards how long it takes to have a fire plan review. Delays of upwards to 6 months have been the standard for quite some time. This is unacceptable. It's costly for developers and residents. It's bad for the economy and job growth. To expedite the review process, we've issued guidance to builders and developers on how to obtain third-party reviews of fire plans. Developers have the option of paying for this review. These fees will be competitive with the fees currently being charged for larger projects. Our overarching goal is to reduce the time frame for approval to as little as 10 days rather than weeks or months. In addition, the city is exploring options for reducing delays, increasing efficiency, and improving customer service in the long term. This will include additional staffing in the proper places, investment in technology, and a modified plan review procedure. Additional policy changes will be developed and implemented as details are refined. Again, this is positive and needed for positive economic development. Despite this issue, on a positive note, developers and investors continue to choose Warwick, I'm happy to say. From larger projects like we're seeing in City Center to smaller enterprises throughout the city, business is booming, and one of my top priorities is to keep that momentum going. City Center, our unique transit-oriented development surrounding TF Green Airport, is really coming into its own, and we're seeing the fruits of labor of many people as this area is transforming. City Center is spot on a story of our community's perseverance in the face of challenges. With our hard work and patience, we are creating a neighborhood that's becoming the premier choice for companies to do business. Developer and Warwick businessman Mike Diemer is one of those who early on saw the value of the City Center concept. And a decade ago, he received city approvals that would bring his own vision for his property adjacent to the Interlink commuter station to reality. Then, as we all know, the economy tanked very hard. The developer persevered in the face of financial adversity. And this summer, we celebrate with him and his family his investment as we cut the ribbons at the Hyatt Place Hotel, which brought the construction jobs and permanent full-time positions to the city of Warwick. This is the 17th hotel in the city of Warwick. It stands as a proud symbol of one man's belief that anything is possible if you just work hard, have faith, and know that the sun will eventually shine after the stormy skies have passed. I believe our vision and Mike's tenacity provided the foundation for the proposed Residence Inn at the Marriott, which on Monday, the City Council approved for that development. The six-story hotel to be constructed in the core of City Center will bring 40 new jobs to Warwick, in addition to part-time construction work. Its owners, Pinnacle Hotel Management, are making an investment of at least $45 million for this hotel, renovations to the Radisson, and for future development of the former Lars parking lot. All told, this means the revitalization of 14.5 acres within the City Center project. And this could not be accomplished without the hard work of our planning department, our City Council, and the administration. Elsewhere in City Center, we're welcoming Tavolo, an Italian eatery where the former Legal Seafood will soon be opened. We have the Newport Group that purchased the Ironworks Tavern that is currently undergoing reservations and will be reopening soon. Peak Performance has also invested a great deal of time into making its new home on Coronado Road more attractive. We're bringing new life and jobs to some of our old historic properties. In Pontiac Village, the first phase of redevelopment of Pontiac Mills has been completed. In just a few months, 60% of the apartments have already been rented, and riverfront units are coming online in the next week. Workers are busy rehabilitating the top 14 units for rental as well. Developer Larry Silverstein's transformative work at this historic mills has also lured businesses from Newport, Garden City, and throughout Rhode Island, the Patuxent Valley. Many businesses located here, Union Mills, Studio B, On the Rope Boxing, Fitness, Appanag Brewery, great place to visit. They now call Pontiac their home. In historic Appanag Village, AAA has purchased the Sawtooth Building with plans to relocate its local headquarters there and preserve the 100-year-old structure that stands as a symbol of our industrial heritage that helped shape the city of Warwick. This will provide an influx of AAA employees and members there, bringing new customers to local businesses, new residents to our city, and activity in the heart of our village. We're also becoming a destination for the medical industry. The Crown Plaza property, OrthoRI, is constructing a 100,000 square foot three-story facility. Orthopedic specialists have locations throughout the state and offer more than 55 providers, as well as more than 3,000 trainers, therapists, are bringing with them 125 construction jobs, 275 permanent biomedical jobs, with a total annual payroll of $30 million. Again, employees that will be living off catering to our businesses within our community. It's not just a new business that are thriving in Warwick. Greenwood Credit Union, a fixture in our community for over 70 years, is constructing a new 20,000 square foot operation center across the street from its existing building. I thank them for their continued belief that Warwick is truly the best place in which to do business. And stay tuned for expansions from other businesses that already exist within our community. Dave's Marketplace, Ocean State Job Lot, and others. You'll be hearing news about expansions within a community that which they like to be a part of and have faith in. We're also seeing our transitional planning efforts becoming a reality with proposed mixed-use retail development at the Showcase Cinemas and a new restaurant at the site of a former gas station. These efforts are transforming our community along the East Greenwich Line into a traditional village setting that complements our neighbors to the south. Even as I'm committed to supporting large-scale projects that are great for Warwick, as a businessman myself, I know that small businesses are the lifeblood of the community and the lifeblood of the state. So as promised in my inaugural remarks, I'm continuing to build on momentum that we've established through my weekly one-on-one business program. These first-hand glimpses into how our companies are operating will only serve to help us better understand their needs and help them to thrive. I have been fortunate enough to walk through the doors of many unique and long-standing organizations, as well as many up-and-coming ones. I found that within a small business community, you can also have signs of our city's perseverance with companies that have weathered the challenges of starting up and those that have withstood both the ups and downs of the economy over time and continue to exceed. Whether it's newer businesses like A Piece of Cake, which has been in Warwick for only 3 years, or a third generation business such as Warwick Ice Cream, our city does not lack the entrepreneurial vision it takes to develop a business and succeed in this community. What's now known as Warwick Ice Cream had its modest beginnings as Warwick Milk, founded by dairy farmer Charlie Bucci in 1930. Charlie and his wife were blessed with 5 children. 4 sons, 3 of which were deaf, 1 daughter. In those days, education and employment opportunities for those with handicaps were limited. But Charlie realized that, and he provided a tremendous way for him and his family to endure all this, and they would succeed, and they have. He built Warwick Mill from the ground up. His sons were educated through working there. In 1932, they capitalized on the leftover cream they had at the end of each day, started serving ice cream from a brand new storefront. By 1940, the modest storefront had grown into a full-service ice cream parlor and restaurant. During the 50s, the business continued to succeed, and in the 60s, it grew to now what we know as Warwick Ice Cream, which is now poised to become a fourth-generation company. Likewise, in visiting businesses, we've attracted new technology and retail companies that continue to grow, like Squad Locker, which operates internationally, nationally and internationally. Ensure My Trip, again, another novel concept that operates nationally and internationally. These are prime examples of Warwick's ability to attract and retain an array of companies with cutting-edge business models. Had I not gone out to these businesses, I would never know they had existed or what they did. My goal is to continue to promote our central location between New York and Boston with access by both land and air to entice companies to explore our business-friendly environment. There are further businesses, and I can go on and on. This one took a special interest in, of Scott and Lynn Pellet, business owners in our community for 20 years now. Scott was injured in his teens and had become an avid hand cyclist. Combining their business experience and love of sport and fitness, the Pellets began a niche internet-based handy cycle business on a gateway computer in a small closet. Today, BikeOn boasts 15 employees and an international customer base, all operated within their headquarters in Appanock Village. We can support development in harmony with our environment as we double down on our efforts to achieve a sustainable Warwick. With 3 new solar parks, this initiative, again, the Solar Park Initiative, array of residential and commercial renewable energy alternatives. We'll move forward with these policies designed to promote renewables in a manner that saves the city money while preserving our environment for our children and their children and their children. Speaking of infrastructure and city assets, let's talk about the infrastructure. With nearly 400 miles of city roads constructed post-World War II, keeping neighborhood streets in good condition has been a challenge. Despite the City Council's past efforts, the annual budget did not sufficiently address the significant needs throughout our community. That's why the current budget contained an allocation of $5 million, which has allowed us to repair many streets that have been in dire need and attention. We'll be back in the neighborhoods throughout the city when the construction season begins in the springtime. I can assure you that some funding will be included for road paving. This program, with joint efforts of myself and our city council, will continue. We as a community need to begin discussing the need to pay for larger scale road improvements through other funding means if we collectively desire an accelerated schedule for this initiative. Better roads mean safer neighborhoods. It would also bolster our economic development efforts because people want to invest in a community that's deeply invested in itself. We also have a dozen municipal buildings that have been left in disrepair. For instance, we've gathered here because a fire suppression main failed in the City Hall Council chambers. That happened back in October. Repairs are ongoing, and we have all been inconvenienced, City Council and government entities. And we're all aware of the burst pipe that occurred in the Annex building last winter that damaged a significant portion of the building and continues to displace city employees in less than desirable quarters in the former Green Elementary School. Until this is resolved, we will be required to look at the use of all city assets to balance saving the taxpayers' money while also supporting valuable community organizations. Just after taking office, I learned that a structural report, which should have been conducted and sent to our insurer, had never been completed. I immediately commissioned the required structural analysis and have since pressed the trust with potential legal action so that our city and taxpayers can see a full reimbursement for their loss. These examples of poor facility management highlights the need to make an in-depth inspections of our assets and to develop a facility management plan to determine what the long and short-term needs and what the long and short-term needs are within the city of Warwick. Once that's completed, we can then develop a short, medium, and long-term operation and maintenance strategy to meet those requirements. This is the best and most effective way to protect our assets. Without a facilities management plan, these buildings tend to languish, become deteriorated, and are prone to vandalism, causing a blight in the community and negatively impacting area residents and Warwick as a whole. While a more proactive approach should have been taken over the years to properly maintain, reuse, lease, or sell these properties, I've been working aggressively with my city council members, our city council members, on these issues. For example, under my leadership, we've repaired the Buttonwoods Community Center. I'm happy to report that the center will be reopened to house some municipal departments and for community use. We've accomplished this in 6 short months, and I'd like to commend my colleagues on the City Council, Councilman Lattiser, Councilman McAllister, who represents that area, and the numerous contractors that devoted time, monies, and attention, and donated time, money, and attention to this project. And most importantly, our department, a DPW director and his staff, which filled in and did what was necessary to be done on its savings to the taxpayers. And I thank them all. Again, it's a collective, cooperative effort that makes this a success. The Buttonwoods restoration preserves this public property while providing a more convenient location for the public and our employees. This will also provide us some time to reach out to the community and collectively discuss options, including what the community believes should be our commitment in reimagining a new permanent location for a City Hall annex. And on Monday, again, this City Council approved the sale of the former Christopher Road School, which has been vacant for more than a decade and became a neighborhood eyesore. The property will be repurposed for a proposed residential development. This will eliminate hazards and provide the city with 29 new homes within our community and membership within our community. In addition to the people it brings into the community, it will generate significant residential property tax revenue. The project stands to generate over $7,000 in annual tax revenue per residence. That comes to in excess of $200,000 a year on a parcel that was tax exempt for nearly 70 years. This project will provide our community with a development that is truly transformative. And I thank you, Councilman Ricks, too, for your diamond devotion that lies within Councilman Ricks's ward. In the coming months, we'll be working to establish appropriate reuses for our remaining vacant municipal facilities so they do not fall farther into disrepair and continue to be an eyesore to the surrounding neighborhoods. Stay tuned for further news as we proceed forward. There are a couple of prospects on the horizon that will significantly assist us in a financial sense if we can put together an agreement to occupy some of these buildings. As our city ages, the state of the city's water and sewer infrastructure and several of our assets are also of a significant concern. With 87% of our water system constructed between 1930 and 1970, and some 40% of our sewer system built prior to 1980, the need to take immediate action to address these issues is a comprehensive, effective way to prevent additional disruption in our whole community. And it cannot be understated that this is very much needed. Never was there more evident than on the day before Thanksgiving. As people living in the Sandy Lane area neighborhood near the Cooper Building. We're readying their homes for guests and preparing food for the holiday. A main sewer line collapsed. This meant the backup of sewage into approximately a dozen homes, ruining Thanksgiving for these residents and more critically leaving them to deal with the cleanup and when they should have been enjoying a long, restful weekend. And DPW Director Solitro and myself were there and we saw this firsthand. And it was not a happy occasion. We have all experienced the traffic issues on Sandy Lane and the weeks following. Crews repaired that line. Final work was just completed last week. Ongoing issues with our water infrastructure are also wreaking havoc that could have been avoided with a renewal or replacement plan in place. In the fall, we had a water main line collapse right near the highway, Route 95. And almost weekly, water mains are breaking in areas throughout the city. These often result in emergency water shutoffs with no advance notice to residents that they'll be without water, in some cases, for an extended period of time. I recall that night when the water main failed near 95, a third of the city was without water. A third of the city did not know they were without water. That's because the water main break took place, I think it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. Director Solitro, members of Warwick Water Department, and myself were out there tracing the leak. And we worked very hard to find that leak and find an alternative source of water flow to feed the residents of our city the water that they would expect when they woke up in the morning. And that was done without skipping a beat. And again, that's dedication, that's time, that's knowledge, knowing your job and knowing how to do it right. And Dan O'Rourke was also out there with us, and Brad, and it's something that I will never forget. But again, the residents and businesses of the city of Warwick did not skip a beat because they were sleeping at that hour. Our residents should not be inconvenienced, and our businesses should not lose customers because our infrastructure is crumbling. That's not to mention that the exorbitant costs associated with these emergency repairs already at $2.3 million and climbing since last summer. Funds that would have been better spent invested into proactivity, protecting all of our assets. These incidents speak to the very real need to be proactive addressing city issues. We must develop a comprehensive 10-year strategy to address our city's infrastructure needs and to make adequate annual allocations for renewal and replacement budgets in both water and sewer. We can no longer kick the proverbial can down the road. What is now our responsibility onto future generations? We have to grab the bull by the horns. Our city, our public health and safety, and the environment depends on a proactive leadership. And in this regard, going forward, I'm up for the challenge. Recreation and neighborhood. I'm also going to continue leading the charge to improve our recreational facilities in our neighborhoods. The Mickey Stevens Sports Complex, which should be a jewel in our community, has been sorely neglected for far too long. Voter-approved bond funds approved in 2006 have been continually frozen, delaying important and necessary improvements to that facility. 13 years later, those problems have gotten worse. Our residents and our children and our youth deserve better at that facility. Think about it. We talk about economic development. Just one event that's scheduled in 2020, the Synchronized Ice Skating Championship, is projected to have a direct spending impact of $2.8 million and will be attracting 3,000 visitors on a weekend to our state. What kind of economic impact is that? That is a terrific economic impact. So it behooves us to have top-notch facilities to enhance recreational economic development opportunities and bring people to our community. Invite them to our 39 miles of coastline. Let them see what Warwick has to offer. A combination of grant funding, municipal allocations, donated materials could assist us in making repairs and enhancements to the Mickey Stevens complex. We will be vigorously exploring all options in months to come. As I've mentioned before, it's important that Warwick's children have a safe place to play in their home. Unfortunately, many of our pocket parks are in need of attention. The Adopt a Playground program we will implement will allow us for new equipment and other improvements to neighborhood playgrounds and fields. This initiative will stand as a strong symbol of the spirit of collaboration that exists here in Warwick between the residents, the city officials, and the businesses. It's not just the smaller parks that will be improved. A generous Rhode Island DEM grant and support from the Friends of Salter Groves will fund a new playground, new landscaping, tables, and other amenities for families to enjoy within our community. At City Park, there will be new dugouts and picnic shelters along with solar-powered restrooms. As we anticipate the summer months, those who enjoy relaxing along our beautiful shoreline have a lot to look forward to. Iconic Rocky Point has been beautifully restored, and people throughout Rhode Island will once again have the opportunity to enjoy a variety of family-friendly events in view of fantastic and beautiful Narragansett Bay. New picnic benches, shelters, improved handicap access are only enhancing our efforts to ensure that Rocky Point remains one of the premier recreation facilities in the state of Rhode Island that draws so many with fond memories to our community. As council president, I worked closely with DEM to lead a cooperative effort to reconstruct the popular fishing pier at Rocky Point. When complete, the 111-foot deck will offer tremendous views of the bay with wide benches that will give folks a place to sit and relax near the water. As recently as this week, Councilman Lattiser, myself, and sat down with DEM to press the point and get our time frame in place to effectuate this to become a reality this summer. I'm pleased that once again residents of Warwick and the Ocean State will enjoy outstanding access to Narragansett Bay and all of its natural treasures on a pier that reminds us of the rich history of the park and our maritime heritage. And as beach season approaches, I look forward to offering residents free access to our popular beaches with a robust litter cleanup program that is endorsed by all who frequent our shoreline. But it's not just our parks and playgrounds that will have our attention. We'll be doubling down on our efforts to strengthen minimum housing standards to better address issues of blight and public health concerns to make our neighborhoods safer and more attractive. We're already seeing business people who are invested in helping to make Warwick more attractive. We've got Ironworks Tavern and Peak Performance have jointly adopted the Coronado Road corridor. No easy task, given the extensive landscaping that was installed as part of its improvement. I thank them for approaching the city to volunteer their time and effort to keep this thoroughfare an attractive gateway into city center. And I hope more businesses like them will take part in this type of initiative. Though the many issues that have combined to create this perfect storm of our city are daunting, I have full confidence that we will weather them successfully. Throughout my nearly two decades in public service and in 10 months that I've been here, I've proven that I'm up for the task. To be clear, there are challenges ahead of us, but they can be overcome. With a firm, steady hand on the tiller, I am committed to steering Warwick to brighter days and calmer seas. The challenges may be difficult and require tough choices, but they are not insurmountable. And we as a community have proven time and time again that we are resilient and come together to support each other through turbulent times. The flood of 2010 is a good example of that. Here are two more. In November, fire helped define the true meaning of community. On Thanksgiving Eve, Woodbury Union Presbyterian Church was consumed by fire. It was a horrible sight, many tears. Our firefighters attacked that fire diligently, did a great job. Our police kept control in the area. It was devastating. Within days of that fire, however, the Woodbury congregation gathered for their Sunday service a few blocks away at St. Benedict's Catholic Church. What could have been a time for despair was quickly turned into a time for hope. Without hesitating, Father Marciano extended a helping hand to the Woodbury congregation. 2 days later, it would be the city's turn to offer a helping hand. This time it was St. Kevin's School. Extreme water damage caused by a burst pipe over the holiday weekend left students, faculty, and staff without a place to resume classes. I, along with my administration, the city council, the school department, school employees, city employees, stepped in and worked. We worked together as a community to find a temporary home for St. Kevin's. Working together, we were able to successfully move the entire student body into the vacant Randall Holden Elementary School. Friends, thank you. I bring this up because that's what it takes to make a city, but more importantly, demonstrates what a community really is. The ability to collectively face challenges and adversity head on and work collaboratively to find solutions. That's what a community is about. Being good stewards, protecting the best interest of our city is why I'm here. It's why our city council's here. That's why our school committee's here. Both fire and water provided to be no match for resilience of our community. Just as aging infrastructures, finances, and contracts won't define or defeat us. In the months ahead, we will use our collective knowledge to find resourceful and creative ways to better manage our city on an ongoing basis. We will become proactive rather than reactive. Gone are the days of the band-aids and quick fixes. We will invest in long-term sustainable solutions that will benefit this generation and act as a foundation for all future generations. In my opinion, Warwick is a jewel of Rhode Island. We have a rich history that dates back to the American Revolution. Warwick was founded on the backs of those who had big dreams and always looked to the brighter days ahead. Similarly, I know that together we will meet these challenges head on in the months to come. I will be soliciting input from all our residents, our business community, and the nonprofits that call Warwick home on how best to use the resources and tools available to us to make our city even better. I repeat what I've said in the past. I know that every person here tonight is vested in helping our community to succeed and transform. Because we live here, because we work here, because here we have experienced the great joy and even times of sorrow, because it's a place we call home, because I know each and every one of you share my vision for a reinvigorated Warwick. And tonight, I add with full confidence, it's also because working together, I know that we can withstand any tempest that comes our way. Because our community is a community that perseveres and moves forward with hope and purpose, knowing that our best days and smoother sailing are yet to come. Thank you.
I would like to announce some of our senators and representatives that did come in after Mayor Solomon had begun his presentation. And the first person I'd like to thank for coming is the Speaker of the House, Mr. Mattiello. Thank you very much. Also, our representatives and senators, Majority Leader Sakachi, Senator Lynch, and Senator McKinney. Thank you very much for attending also. On a personal note, I'd also, this is my, I guess, 20th year working, or 19th year anyway, working with Councilman, Council President, and now Mayor Solomon. And I cannot think of another person in the city that is prepared for the tasks that we face in the future. And I know that it's tough to put a bright spin on a dark scenario, but I have the utmost confidence in his ability to lead us in some very, very difficult times. On a personal note, we all have jobs. We all know what it's like to work those jobs. But the sacrifice that I have seen and personally witnessed from this mayor, I've seen from no other. The times that I get emails or text messages in the middle of the night, 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning, is above and beyond the call of duty. And I'd like to say that about my colleagues on the council also. It's just refreshing to work together to try and solve problems. And it's refreshing to see somebody that's on the job and cares so much about where we're going 24/7. We are not always going to agree. That's not the purpose of government. It's to exchange ideas and come up with the best solutions. And it's just so refreshing to be able to speak to the Chief Executive Officer and my colleagues to express our concerns and ideas and to come up with the best educated solutions that we can. This isn't about criticizing others. It's about solving problems. And I would like to thank Mayor Solomon for stepping to the plate, and for as long as I've been a citizen of Warwick, I think it's 1968, I've never seen a State of the City address. As long as I've been on the council, there's never been one. And it's so critically important to guide us on where we're going, the tough decisions that we need to make, that those decisions are not personal towards anyone, but they're necessary to move us forward. And again, I thank Mayor Solomon and the City Council for moving us forward in the right direction. And with that said, if I could have a motion to adjourn.
So